This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Alabama's own Senator Phil Williams invites In-N-Out Burger to our state. Why would he take a stand on a fast food chain? We go there now on Tactics.
Staring, looking funny at me when I step to the window and I toss the TV.
Great to be with you this morning. I am Caleb Colquitt. Glad to finally be back. I was sick for much of last week, but I am finally back. I would not say that I'm fully recovered, but I'm certainly much, much better than I was the other day. I could barely utter a sentence without getting my throat messed up and starting to cough, and obviously that's not something that's really enjoyable to listen to, so I figured it would probably be best to just have y'all listen to the best ofs. But nonetheless, I appreciate everybody that said something to me. I know several listeners either messaged me or got in touch with me that know me personally and were concerned, but I am better. I'm doing okay, although I am, sadly, going to have to miss some this week. I'm not sure exactly how much, but I am going to have to miss some even more than I did last week because I'm going to be having surgery. It's minor surgery. It's an outpatient procedure. All I'm having done is having my port removed, so it's not that I'm sick again or anything like that. They just have to go ahead and take the port out that they were using when they had chemo. And actually, this is a very good sign because my doctors would not have recommended that I get my port removed if they were concerned that I was going to have to undergo chemotherapy once again. So this is actually really good news, even though it's going to mean that I'm out for a little bit, because it essentially is my doctor saying that they are so confident that my cancer is gone and they are so confident I will not have to have chemotherapy again that they're going to go ahead and take out the apparatus which I take chemotherapy through. So really good news all around. I'm off my blood thinners now. Because of that, they were afraid that the port itself was causing the blood clots in my lungs, and the blood clots that they were concerned about, they seem to be gone. I'm not feeling any pain, even though I'm off of my blood thinners. So all good news all around. It's just something that is unfortunately going to be a slight inconvenience. And I really hope that the surgery is going to be done soon, because I'm heading to the Ukraine in a month, and I certainly do want to be back at 100% before I head to Ukraine. But anyway, all that stuff aside, I wake up this morning very early because I went to bed pretty early last night, and I wake up about 5 and switch on Fox and Friends. I usually like to switch back and forth between Allison Camerato on CNN and Fox and Friends, try to get both sides and see what they're talking about, see where their priorities are. I was glad because I don't usually watch Fox and Friends all that often. I usually stick more to CNN just because I like to see what the other side is talking about. And what was funny this morning is I flip it on and I look, I was like, wait a second, that guy looks familiar. That's Phil Williams. He's a senator right here in the state of Alabama. And so it was a pleasant surprise. I was trying to figure out what he was doing on the national shows. But here's what happened. And I actually did, you may remember, if you follow me on Twitter, at Tactics Radio, that I commented on this particular story when it broke. Senator Phil Williams said in a tweet, invited a very public way In-N-Out Burger to our state. And just for those of you who don't know why he would do that, what the background story is, In-N-Out Burger is this chain that we don't really have here in Alabama. It's mostly centered around California. I think they're in other states as well, but the company is California-based. So the vast majorities of the In-N-Out Burgers you're going to see are in the state of California. Anyway, so In-N-Out Burger, it turns out that they were giving $25,000 to California's Republican Party. And because of that, a lot of the liberals in California got very upset about this, and there was one who is a California chairman. He's the chairman of the Democrat Party there in the state of California, named Eric Bauman. and he tweeted out that the California burger chain was giving away $25,000 to California Republicans and had done so over the course of the last year and was very upset about this and called publicly in a tweet for a boycott of In-N-Out Burger. And so it actually almost only makes sense that there was a figure that was very big in his state's Democrat Party that sort of to parallel that, we had a member of our state's Republican Party come forward and say, hey, In-N-Out Burger, why don't you build some stuff here? Why don't you have a chain here? We'll back you. And that was really the story. Now, what's funny about this, and this shows how incredibly reactionary we are in the United States of America nowadays, unfortunately. When the left found this out, there were a whole bunch of people on the left that were outraged, that were upset, that called for boycott, said they're never eating an In-N-Out Burger again. Here's what's funny about that. The great crime that they committed, giving $25,000, which is a lot, but let's not kid ourselves, it's not exactly a fortune, especially not in political donations. This great calamity that beset the Democrats there in California, which I don't know why they're worried, because, I mean, other than some local seats, the Republicans don't have really any power in California. It's basically a one-party state, just like Alabama is, just in the other direction. And so, once they did a little digging, it turns out that in the same year, In-N-Out Burger gave about $80,000 to liberal PACs and people who support Democrats. So it is really funny that the Democrats did no research whatsoever and got very upset at In-N-Out Burger for giving any money, giving even one red cent to the Republicans, even though they donate actually more than double that amount, almost triple. No, it would have been triple. Yeah, it would have been more than triple because $80,000, yeah, that would have been just slightly more than triple the amount they gave to the Republicans. And the thing is, that doesn't seem to matter because they gave any money to the Republicans whatsoever. They need to be run out of business and scorned, and they need to see their profit margins hurt and all this stuff, which is hilarious because they actually gave way more to Democrats. And the reactionary mentality that we have now is just absolutely out of control. And another thing that I like about In-N-Out Burger, by the way, and I just found this out because I'd never heard of them before this story broke. Another thing that's interesting about In-N-Out Burger is apparently they write Bible verses on their burger wrappers and their cups. I didn't know this. And there's some companies that do this. You, for example, you've got the Hunt's Brothers Pizza. A lot of people don't know this. Hunt's Brothers Pizza is a somewhat religiously based company. They have Bible verses on their boxes. If you ever get a slice of pizza, it's those pizza places that you see in like, they don't have standalone stores really. They're sold in gas stations and that kind of thing. They have Bible verses on their pizza. And one of the reasons that I like that company and the reason that I support them is because they are open about their faith and they're not ashamed to talk about it. And it's, I mean, for gas station pizza, it's pretty good pizza. If you've ever had some of the lunches that show up in some of these gas stations, they're really just not that good. Hunt's Brothers Pizza is actually pretty solid. I wouldn't say that it's necessarily better than some of the other pizza chains around here, but Hunt's Brothers Pizza, not bad. And In-N-Out Burger, I have no idea what they taste like because I've never actually seen one. I've never actually been to one. But it is funny to me that this whole thing started, even though In-N-Out Burger actually gives far more money to Democrats, that they got targeted for the ire of the Democrats just because they gave any money at all to Republicans. And what's really hilarious about this whole thing is that it backfired and backfired spectacularly. With this whole thing just blowing up in their face, In-N-Out Burger, just kind of like what happened when they proposed a bunch of protests when it came to Chick-fil-A, the whole thing really blew up in their face. Over the weekend, In-N-Out Burger was getting tons of business, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that because they brought this to the public eye, then they got a lot of free publicity as well, which I guess that must be true because, like I said, I'd never even heard of In-N-Out Burger before this took place. I didn't even know that was a thing. And so this particular company, which was targeted because they gave money to Republicans and also possibly maybe a little bit of it was because they are open about their faith and they talk about their Christianity. They give Bible verses and put those on burger wrappers. Apparently, this is what drew the Democrats' ire, and it resulted in a ton of business for them. And like I say to the people who are critical of Chick-fil-A, every time one of these stories comes up, all you're doing is giving a ton of free publicity to the people you're trying to hurt. Because this is basically free advertising for them. Now, in this state, that doesn't make a huge difference because there aren't any In-N-Out burgers, despite Phil Williams' best efforts, in the state of Alabama. But especially when you're talking about a company like Chick-fil-A, which has locations all over the country now, when that takes place, what you're doing is you're giving them tons of free advertisement. And you're much more incentivizing people to go there, even people that don't necessarily have an opinion on the issue. You know, whether or not you care who they donated to, or in Chick-fil-A's case, whether or not you care about the gay marriage thing, giving that free publicity inspires people that don't even have an opinion on it to go because it's free advertising, and the people who do have an opinion on it, you're motivating them to support that particular company. Like I've said before, every time I see a story about Chick-fil-A being bashed, I go to Chick-fil-A, and I don't eat at Chick-fil-A pretty much any other time other than that, just because I'm not a big chicken guy. But what you were doing is you were drumming up all this free support and free publicity of them. So this whole thing really blew up in their face, and even they realized it. Bauman, I guess is the way to say his name. Eric Bauman, the guy who originally tweeted and called for this boycott, he responded again and said he wanted to call off the boycott because he was seeing that they were getting all this free press and free business that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise because of the boycott that he called for. So it's really funny, and we'll actually pick this up because I think we have a little bit more time about Phil Williams, who, like I said, made this appearance on Fox and Friends this morning talking about this. If you have any opinions about this or about Phil Williams specifically, 860-1440. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
I give and bequeath my soul to Almighty God that gave it me, hoping that through the meritorious death and passion of our Savior and Redeemer, Jesus Christ, to receive absolution and remission for all my sins. Governor George Mason, Father of the Bill of Rights.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 is the number if you want to get in touch with us. So, one thing that we may be missing, because we were just talking about the story where Alabama Representative Phil Williamson has invited In-N-Out Burger to the state of Alabama because of the boycott, saying, actually, why don't I just go ahead and read his tweet here? He says, "Hey, In-N-Out Burger, come on to Alabama. We love burgers and we love Republicans." And he's right. He was talking about this on the TV this morning. He was saying, Alabama is a very red state. We love Republicans and we love our burgers, ergo they should come here. And he was also bragging about, and I was really appreciative to see Williams do this, he was talking about how really Alabama has been in recent weeks accommodated several times, being the number one state in manufacturing, for example. Alabama is on the uptick when it comes to business. There's a really strong economic environment right now for businesses, and so it would be a good idea for a new franchise to come to the state of Alabama. We talked about just a couple weeks ago that there's going to be a Buc-ee's in the state of Alabama, the first one that is not in the state of Texas. So Alabama is really doing well right now. Really, the economy is booming. Now, some of that is because of some of the policies in our state. Some of that is because the nation as a whole is kind of on the upswing right now. So I do want to give some credit. I don't want to give too much credit. But when it comes to what Phil Williams was saying, it absolutely does make sense. But I do think, unfortunately, that this does gloss over perhaps one of the larger questions, which is it as good as Whataburger? I doubt it, but I've never had it, so I can't make a decision on that yet. So I will be conducting a thorough investigation into this matter to bring those important burning questions, give you the answers that you're seeking for that. So I think what I need to do is see if the people at Cumulus are willing to fly me out to California to test a Whataburger just to make sure that they're safe for the consumption of Alabamians. I think that that's really what needs to happen. I know that there's a massive expense account for Cumulus. I'm pretty sure that they're going to grant that for me. Okay, probably not. But We'll see where that goes. We'll push it. I'll probably be thrown out of the office immediately when I suggest that, but we'll see where it goes. Anyway, In-N-Out Burger, I do really want to see if they're just as good as Whataburger, which is another good reason why they need to come and set down some roots in the state of Alabama. I would love to see them move here just because it's another option for the burgers. And if they're good burgers, then I'll eat there regardless of the politics. So this is just kind of the backlash that you're going to see, though, when it comes to the left. The left, especially when they're being outrageously unreasonable, then people tend to pick up on that, and people tend to let those really strange stances backfire right in their face. Perfect example, we already talked about Chick-fil-A, where the exact same thing happened. They were talking about how people should be boycotting Chick-fil-A because, even though this wasn't the company stance, because the CEO and founder of Chick-fil-A was against gay marriage and said that it's immoral, which, by the way, it is, but just because he said that people should boycott Chick-fil-A, that they're going to drive Chick-fil-A out of business. And of course, what resulted in that was Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day, where they saw the biggest numbers that they had ever seen before for one day of Chick-fil-A purchases. There wasn't a freaking chicken sandwich in the city. I remember because I was going to go down there after church. It happened on a Wednesday. I was going to go down there after church and show my support. They were out of food. Not just sandwiches, they were out of everything. They had to close because they ran out of food. That's how much business they did on that day. So just amazing to me that the left continues to do this over and over and over and over again, and over again blows up in their face, and yet they still continue to do it. When it comes to the plastic straw thing, now people who don't use plastic straws like myself are actually taking pictures of ourselves drinking out of plastic straws just to tick the left off. And so you're going to see stuff like this happen when something is very obviously stupid. People, even the general population, people that aren't really paying all that much attention or do a lot of research on it, I think, are going to voice that. Now, some of the boycotts they've done have been very successful. When it comes to putting public pressure on certain people's sponsors, for example, people they don't like Laura Ingraham, they've actually been pretty successful on that. People like Bill O'Reilly, they tried to do it to Glenn Beck. They've tried to do it to all kinds of companies to put public pressure on them to not advertise with them, to not partner with them. And they've been very successful in some of those boycotts. But in a lot of these boycotts, especially one where the company itself actually gave money to both sides and gave three times, more than three times, that amount to the Democrats in the state of California, people just pretty quickly see the hypocrisy and just ignore all the fake outrage coming from the left. And so that's really what I think Phil Williams was tapping into, saying that this whole thing is basically a non-story, it's ridiculous, and so we're actually going to come forward and support a company that wants to come into our state, as opposed to trying to have actual elected public officials calling for boycotts of private companies. And this is something that I've been very consistent on. I don't like it when Trump is calling for protests of Amazon or going after companies that he doesn't like. I didn't like it when Barack Obama kind of gave his blessing to going after private companies and boycotts. And it's not good on any level. Not the president, not the state level, not state officials. Regardless of who's doing it or what private business they're specifically going after, I just don't like the idea of boycotts. I just don't. There's some things that I personally boycott, companies that do some things that I don't like that I personally will not engage in business in, but I don't like calling for mass boycotts across the board, telling people that they're immoral or they're doing something wrong if they buy a chicken sandwich or a burger. And that really does bring me to my final point here and my final thought, which is, can we not eat a freaking cheeseburger without sending a political message? Is this how partisan and divided as a people have become? That we can't sit down and have a fast food burger and fries with our family without worrying about what kind of political message we're sending to other people? Can we just take politics and religion and all this other stuff out of our fast food? I mean, I think that's a very reasonable first step in trying to undo a lot of this. That's my take on it anyway. I'd love to hear yours. It looks like we have one caller on the line, which we'll go to as soon as this commercial break is over. There are two open right now if you want to weigh in on this. 860-1440. Do you like Phil Williams, your own representative, going on TV and weighing in on this? Would you rather us just stay out of it altogether? What's your take on this? 860-1440. We'll be right back.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
All right, let's go straight to the phones. Let's go to John from Millbrook on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I wanted to weigh in on this particular subject and have a position on it.
Sure.
One of the tenets of the Democrat Party must be to always look like you're doing something. Even if it doesn't make any sense, or you know, even if there's no logic to it, or even if it's not going to do you any good, or anyone else any good, always look like you're doing something.
There's a couple of responses I want to have to that. First of all, it does sound like you drew that straight out of Jonathan Swift's novel, Gulliver's Travels. You remember on the island they have that rule that they have to always look busy?
Never seen that, but okay, we think alike, I guess.
Right, in Gulliver's Travels, so one of the rules that they have to adhere to is they have to always look busy. And Gulliver points out, but the work they're doing isn't doing any good. It's like, doesn't matter. The rule is we have to always look busy, whether it's actually accomplishing anything or not. And so that's kind of the thing. And Gulliver's Travels is actually intended as a political commentary and intended as satire. So there's a point to be made there. But also, there was a great video that was done by Dennis Prager of PragerU. And he said the primary difference in Republicans and Democrats is Republicans ask what feels good. Republicans tend to ask, does it do good? Democrats tend to ask what feels good. And so because it feels good, because they feel angry at this burger chain and they want to feel as though they're doing something, they want to feel as though they're doing something productive, even though it's actually not doing that, even though it's having the opposite of their intended effect, it makes them feel better to not eat at that particular restaurant, and so that's what they do.
Yeah, I heard a liberal talk show host had a guy on his show this morning.
Mm-hmm.
There's an organized protest going on right now among prisoners, and he kept a prisoner on his show for about 15 or 20 minutes this morning.
How the heck do you protest in prison?
Well, you do a hunger strike, or there are other things. He talked about some of those kinds of things. And I always said, you know, like I did with y'all, you'll eat when you get hungry.
Right, that's what I'm confused about.
You know, I don't know how you go about doing that. But he said we need to have fundamental rights like everyone else has, like venting and voting and protesting and all of those kinds of things. And he mentioned better conditions and things like that. We need to have, but the comment was, we need to have rights just like everyone else. Well, part of the thing, the reason they're being punished are the underlying punishment is that you do lose a lot of your rights.
Right. You lose the right to, for example, privacy. You lose the right to freedom of movement. You lose the right to freedom of speech in many regards. And so there is a abridgment of rights that do take place. I'm not wholly unsympathetic to his underlying message that we do need decent conditions in prison. I'm not a fan of, and this is a constitutional right as well, you have a constitutional right to not undergo cruel or unusual punishment, and I understand that. But I'm still just baffled by the idea that you can actually protest as an incarcerated person. That just blows my mind. Like,
yeah, I don't think they should have the right to vote.
Well, they don't have the right to vote, and you're right. They.
Nah, in some places they do.
Well, maybe in state elections, in a federal election, once you're a convict, you can't vote.
Right. But I know in some states they are able to do that because the prison population has swayed a couple of elections in times past.
Yeah.
I remember one state was Wisconsin. I think they were able to do that.
I don't know. I suppose that's possible. I know on the federal level they're not allowed to do that, but.
But back to the point,
it's
interesting that to do something like in this particular situation with the hamburger place, there are so many issues in this world and in our country to deal with, and we're talking about $25,000 and a hamburger place.
Right.
And that's about the silliest thing you could come up with. There are worse things, but because they can come up with some outlandish issues to try to deal with. But as far as this one is concerned, it's just silly, and it makes them look silly.
Well, that's the thing. It makes them look petty and childish, which they are. But the reason that it casts that light on them is because the Democrats already pretty much own the state of California. Is this really something that they need to put up as a priority? Like, if I were a Democrat in California, which is really strange for me to even think about being in that position, but if I were a Democrat in California, I think that I would be sitting there going, is this really what we're paying this guy a six-figure salary to do, to call out private businesses that aren't hurting anybody, that are actually giving more money to Democrats than they are to Republicans, and say that we need to boycott them and drive them out of the state? Is this really the top priority for the Democrats right now?
A more important issue certainly was one that Kevin brought up this morning as far as Democrats are concerned. I think we would both agree that probably 80% of Chicago is Democrat.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's incredibly high. And he was talking about the fact that we're in September now, and they've already had over 300 murders in the city of Chicago, just in one city.
Right.
And that's it. And that's a big issue, but the hamburger thing seems so petty when you compare it to something like that.
Well, it absolutely is. Thank you so much for your call, John, from Millbrook. I appreciate it. And comparing the two and adding a little perspective when talking about Chicago, what's funny to me is that all these cities that are run by Democrats, by the way, like the city of Montgomery, not to the extent that Chicago is by any stretch of the imagination, but these cities that are all run by Chicago, Chicago is an example of that. These cities that are all run by Democrats, somehow it's always the Republicans' fault that they're having these ridiculous murder rates and having all these problems with crime, and they'll always blame it on that. But going back to the In-N-Out Burger thing, you have to say that at least when Democrats talk about that issue, it is a real issue, whether or not they offer a good solution or not is a different matter. Whether or not their analysis of why the problem exists is a different matter. But at least if they're talking about an issue like that, at least they're talking about something that actually does matter, as opposed to stupid junk like this, which makes absolutely no difference in anybody's life other than the fact that you may choose one burger joint or the other. But here's the thing, to the vast majority of the American population, Republicans, Democrats, people in the middle, people that don't care and don't watch any news at all, is it really a deal breaker for you? Can you really, will you really refrain from eating at a place that you really like and potentially get a good value at? I don't really know what In-N-Out Burger's prices are like. But are you really going to refrain from eating at a place because of a political message? Not even a political message that they're pushing, just donating to a particular political party. Because to me, that's really not a big deal. There are some things that are a bridge too far that I will not support a company if they do. For example, if they are supporting Planned Parenthood. If they support Planned Parenthood and directly donate to them, that's a bridge too far for me. But as far as just giving money to a political party and thinking that regardless of motivation, regardless of the reason that they put that money forward, that they now need to be the subject of ire and they need to not have their business frequented by you or other like-minded people, that to me is just strange, and it's a weird hill that they could choose to die on. Love to hear what you have to think about that. 860-1440. We're actually going to take an early break here, and when we come back, really important issue going on. The vice president of our country, speaking of things with Bible verses all over them, he has been called a Christian supremacist, so we're going to break that down and tell you exactly what that means when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The most effectual means of securing the continuance of our civil and religious liberties is always to remember with reverence and gratitude the source from which they flow. John Jay, First Supreme Court Chief Justice.
Welcome back. Not sure exactly what was going on with that little technical error we had with the return, but hopefully we'll get that fixed. Whatever that is, I'll be working on that during the commercial breaks. Anyway, the vice president of our country has recently come under fire as a Christian supremacist. Now, this is a new term on me, so I looked exactly where it came from and where this claim originates. There's a new book out called The Shadow President. and it accuses a lot of things about Mike Pence. It's a book centered around Mike Pence, and it accuses him of being, I think this is really funny, they talk about him being lazy and incompetent, how he didn't work very hard as a general, or a general, as a governor when he was in Indiana, and he was somebody that essentially just rose to power, but he cared about the position far more than he actually cared about doing the job. And so because of that, they're saying that he's really just kind of an incompetent boob. He doesn't really understand exactly what all is entailed with the job of governor. And they simultaneously accuse him of being an evil genius and a puppet master who's really secretly running the Trump White House. I've said this over and over and over again. When it comes to Trump, when it comes to Bush, when it comes to Pence, whatever conservative Republican figure you want to throw in there, guys, you have to pick one of two things. Either he's an idiot and incompetent, or he's an evil genius. You can't be both at the same time. When you're criticizing these guys, either they're evil and they're secretly manipulating things and running them and they're power hungry, or they're just not all that bright. But when you try to portray them as both, your argument falls apart. You have to either be one or the other. You can make the case that they're evil and that they're working behind the scenes to consolidate power around them, or they're just incompetent and they're bad at their job. But you can't claim that they're both. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The guy can't be Lex Luthor and Bizarro Superman at the same time. He's got to be one or the other. And so, really, the book itself is mostly salacious rumors. There's very little to back any of it up. And one of the things that the book does do is it asks Democrats if they really do want to impeach Trump, considering that Pence would be his replacement. Because if the impeachment process takes place and it goes through and he is impeached, and then after the impeachment it goes to the Senate and he is actually removed from office, it's not like Hillary Clinton becomes president, or it's not like somebody else is appointed. The next person in line is the vice president. Mike Pence then becomes the president of the United States. And so, if that were to happen, and I'm not necessarily gunning for that to happen, I'm just saying that that is the process that it would take place. If that were to happen, Mike Pence would be the president, and they're saying, do you really want Mike Pence to be the president? Because he may be worse. And that's really the case that this particular book makes. Now, I personally think Pence would be a much better president than President Trump is. But I'm not necessarily gunning for Trump to be removed from office. Now, if he does, I'm really not going to lose a whole lot of sleep over it. We're going to cover that story on here just like we cover everything else. But if that takes place, you know, I don't think that we're exactly lost or going to be in really terrible hands. I would be against it, if nothing else, just because of the recoil and the harm that I think it would do to the country. And I especially don't want anybody impeached and removed from office for things that I don't think are legitimate. But my point in all of this is really the question and at the crux of the book. And here's another thing that I think is really really funny about the whole thing, because this book, so far as I can tell, just based on the commentary I've seen, is filled with contradictions. Because they're saying, Democrats, do you really want Mike Pence running things? Do you really want to remove Trump if that's the case? But then they're also saying that that Pence is secretly running everything behind the Trump White House anyway. Well, which is it? If he's already in charge, then wouldn't be promoting him to president, wouldn't that be a lateral movement? If Pence is already secretly running everything anyway, then he's really the mastermind behind Trump and the one that's really controlling everything. Well, then why does it matter whether he's actually president or he's just Vice President Pence who's actually running everything behind the scenes? So that, to me, is another contradiction that I find quite humorous. But anyway, the newest claim in here, and the thing that really caught the interest of the media, is that they are saying that he is a Christian supremacist. And the reason that they're using this phrase, it's very obvious to anybody that's looking at this, the reason they're using the phrase Christian supremacist is because they're trying super hard to somehow connect this to white supremacy. They're trying to use that language of racial superiority and try to connect him to, you know, Nazis and the alt-right and any other kind of supremacy that you could think of, which they probably already think that Pence is a white supremacist. But that aside, they're trying to throw this label of Christian supremacist on him in that same way. So that is a very transparent attempt to try to smear him. But here's the thing. I am a Christian supremacist. I am a loud, vocal, unapologetic Christian supremacist. Jesus Christ, absolutely, without a doubt, in my mind, is supreme. There is nobody higher than him. He sits on the right hand of God. And he is supreme, and because he is supreme, his religion is also supreme. And it is supreme to all other inferior religions. And every religion that is not Christianity is inferior, by definition. I don't say this because I hate anybody that doesn't believe the same way that I believe, that I want them rounded up or want them herded or want their human rights violated or anything like that. But I also believe that I am right and they are wrong. And this is something that is so incredibly difficult for people who are critics of Mike Pence and other Christians on the left to understand. They really do want this idea of postmodernist thought where truth isn't really the goal here. And there is no such thing as truth. It's all subjective. If you like your religion, that's fine. Almost the Obamacare line there. If you like your religion, you can keep your religion. Even though there's a lot of people on the left that don't believe that either. But they kind of want people who are Christians to take the stance of, well, yes, Christianity is a good religion, but all religions are equally valuable and they're all equally valid and one's just as true as the other. And I don't really know whether my religion is true or not. That's not how Christianity works. As C.S. Lewis once said, Christianity leaves you no wiggle room. Either Christ is exactly who he said he is the actual Son of God who raised himself from the dead and who your salvation depends upon, or he is a lunatic or a liar or worse. There is no middle ground. Either Jesus Christ was a crazy person who led millions of people astray, or he's a liar who just wanted to elevate himself to his own power, or he is the divine Son of God, and he is absolutely everything that he claimed that he was. There is no middle ground with Jesus. Jesus specifically left no middle ground for anybody to stand on that. And so the label of Christian supremacist to me is hilarious because every Christian is a Christian supremacist. If you don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God, if you don't believe that Jesus Christ is supreme, then you're not a Christian. So, by definition, every single person that is a Christian supremacist. Which leads you to the logical conclusion of their problem is they don't like Christians. That's the issue. They're okay with people who claim Christianity but don't believe that Christ is actually supreme, that Christ actually is who he says he is, and believe that Christianity is just another one of many possible correct answers. But real Christians, ones that actually adhere to the teachings of Jesus Christ, those people who believe Christ is supreme, those are the ones that they really don't like. And that is abundantly clear in trying to label Mike Pence a supremacist. Because this is the thing. Not all ideas are created equal. People are created equal, and people deserve equal rights. But not all ideas are created equal. There is truth, and there is falseness. And if you have two ideas that are conflicting with one another, maybe they could both be wrong, but they certainly can't both be true at the same time. Judaism and Hinduism cannot be true at the same time. They believe in different things, and some of the things that they believe in contradict one another. Islam and Judaism cannot be correct at the same time. They can both be wrong, but they cannot both be right. And of course, my belief is that Christianity is superior to all of them. That Christianity is right and they are all wrong, at least on some level. There may be some truth included in their teachings, but ultimately they are flawed, they are incomplete, they are not the true religion. And you know what? Jews and Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists and whatever else would say exactly the same thing about me, and that's okay with me. It's okay that we don't agree on everything. It's okay that I don't think that their religion is right and they think that I'm wrong on things. That's fine. But to pretend as though being someone who believes that your ideas are right and that other people's ideas are flawed makes you some kind of bigot or racist doesn't make any sense at all. It's wrong to think that the color of your skin makes you supreme. It's not wrong to think that your ideas are superior to other people's ideas. Ideas, by their very nature, do need to be graded and they need to be checked for their validity. Otherwise, thinking makes no difference. Because if there is no correct answer to reach at, if there is no correct answer to find, then there is no reason and it's a waste of time to go out looking for one. And so really, this is why their entire argument completely falls apart here. And Pence responded, I think, in the best possible way, which is he said, the Bible says count it all joy when you endure trials of any kind. Anytime I'm criticized for my belief in Jesus Christ, I breathe a prayer of praise. So he's doing exactly what the book of Romans and Psalms recommends, which is, or sorry, Romans and Proverbs recommends, which is be kind to your enemies, speak well of them, and it will cast coals of fire on their head. And the way that the left is reacting, you can tell that Pence is doing exactly that.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Brett Kavanaugh's hearings are today to determine whether or not he will be our new Supreme Court justice. We go there now on Tactics. Welcome back. You're listening to Hour 2 of Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com, 860-1440. That's the way to get in touch with us if you want to do so. And what's going on right now, Brett Kavanaugh, of course, he is the nominee that President Trump has put in place to try to replace Justice Kennedy. And unfortunately, I was actually going to pipe this in, but we can't do that because our technology here at Cumulus is subpar, is a little too generous. It's just frankly awful. But, you know, we're doing the best that we can. We're trying to work around that. Unfortunately, we're having some issues with our news partner, CNN, but we were not able to get that for you this morning, unfortunately. The hearings for Brett Kavanaugh are actually going on now. They've been going on for about, I guess, 30 minutes. Now, but that's what we're looking at this moment. And Brett Kavanaugh, it actually, Orrin Hatch of Utah is talking to him right now. The main reason that I was going to try to pipe this in is because one of the senators that sits on the Judiciary Committee is, of course, our very own Senator Doug Jones. And he's been very back and forth on this whole issue, whether or not he's going to support Kavanaugh or not. He has said in the past that he is going to be willing to talk to him, to at least wait to make up his mind until after he has already had a chance to discuss some of these things, some of the issues with him. He put that on hold, though, and said that the Judiciary Committee should put his nomination basically on pause and not hear from him until the end of the investigation between Donald Trump and, or actually not even into Donald Trump, into Donald Trump's campaign in the election with Special Counsel Mueller. The problem, of course, with that is that the Mueller investigation has been going on now for, what, almost 2 years? I mean, it's been going on for a very long time. And that's exactly what Doug Jones is counting on, because believe me, if Doug Jones had his way about it, he would not have to hear not just Brett Kavanaugh, but any nomination from Donald Trump until he is up for re-election again in 2020. And the reason for that is, no matter what he does politically, he's in a lot of trouble. And he knows that. Regardless of how he votes on Brett Kavanaugh, it pretty much ends his political career. And that's the reason that he's so afraid of this, the reason that he's so terrified to speak out and speak out openly on it, because he knows that when he actually brings this up, whether he votes for Kavanaugh and completely obliterates any support and energy from his base, because his base is going to react and say, well, he's voting the same as the Republican senators, so why should we go out and vote for him? And then if he does not vote to confirm Kavanaugh, he knows that that is going to drum up support for his opponent, whomever it may be, in 2020. And that is going to be something that they can look back at and say, look, see, Doug Jones voted against Brett Kavanaugh. Even if Kavanaugh gets nominated, even if Kavanaugh winds up sitting on the court, Doug Jones voting against Brett Kavanaugh is going to be a death sentence in the state of Alabama, and he knows that. But he's pretty sure that his base is going to completely abandon him if he does vote to confirm him. And this was kind of underscored by a recent town hall meeting where he was actually assaulted, had something thrown at him by a liberal who was upset that he was even considering voting for Brett Kavanaugh. And so Doug Jones understands and understands well pretty much no matter how he votes when it comes time to vote on this, that it's pretty much the end of his political career. There's just not a simpler way to put it. Now, maybe that doesn't come to pass. Goodness knows I and every other political analyst in the state of Alabama didn't think that it was possible that even with everything going on with Roy Moore that we were going to have a Democrat senator from this state, but it did. So there's always a slim chance that that observation winds up getting proven wrong. There's always a chance that something crazy happens and somehow Doug Jones actually winds up getting reelected. But he understands that the political wisdom and the odds are completely stacked against him when it comes to this. So it will be fascinating to see if Doug Jones is actually able to, how he's going to react to this. And we will do the best that we can to bring that audio to you tomorrow if I'm not in surgery, which unfortunately could very well happen. But we'll be eagerly anticipating Doug Jones' reaction on all of this. And I love the reasons that the liberals, including Doug Jones now, are trying to stall Brett Kavanaugh's hearings and trying to stall the vote on him, because really their reasoning, if you want to call it that, comes down to two equally stupid reasons. First is the Russia investigation, which doesn't make sense for a number of reasons. First of all, whether he's, and I tweeted this out in response to Kamala Harris suggesting this exact same thing, the president's powers don't go away just because he's potentially under investigation. He's really not under investigation, but his campaign is. But Kamala Harris tried to make the case over the weekend, Senator Kamala Harris, tried to make the case that because he is a potential co-conspirator with this particular investigation, that he ought not be able to nominate anybody to the Supreme Court. To which I responded, well, if you want that to be the law, then all you have to do is propose a constitutional amendment. You can't just make up rules as you go. He has all the constitutional authority of a sitting president right now, just like every other president that has come before him. If you don't like that, that's fine. Your legislature. And if you're a legislator, you don't get to complain about the way laws are because you have the ability to change them. I'm not saying you can't ever complain. I'm just saying that the idea that you ought to, through a weird sense of this private code that you've basically made up for yourself and say, well, this isn't the law and this isn't the way the Constitution prescribes it, but I think the Constitution should read this way, so I'm going to act as though that it does. No. Put forward a law, put forward a constitutional amendment, go through the process of trying to get that passed. There's a reason that it is possible for the Constitution to be amended. If you believe that the presidential powers, be it on nomination specifically or some other presidential power, needs to be taken away when the president is under investigation, that's fine. Propose that as an actual amendment. Until then, just do what the Constitution prescribes, which is advise and consent. You can vote yes, you can vote no. But the point is, it is your constitutional obligation to treat the president as though he is still the president of the United States until there is a reason he is removed from office. Other than that, I'm sorry, you've got to deal with it as it is. And I said exactly the same thing when it came to Barack Obama. Because there were Republicans that wanted to sidestep his nomination and Merrick Garland, and I said that they shouldn't have done that. And the second reason that is, again, equally stupid to the first, is that there's not enough records and documents. This is something that Chuck Schumer has said. This is something that Doug Jones has tried to make the case for. Look, Brett Kavanaugh was not my first choice when it came to the nomination. And I was very clear on that. I'm not going to rehash it here. If you want to listen to it, go back to tacticsradio.com, listen to the archived episodes where I was discussing Brett Kavanaugh and his nomination. But when it comes to Brett Kavanaugh, one thing that I was never critical of him on is that there's not enough records, we don't know anything about him. Brett Kavanaugh was by far not even close the judge that we had the most records on. He may be the judge that has had the most, at least the most material available on him and on his judicial opinions of any candidate in my lifetime. Maybe of all time. I don't know. But the guy has been in Washington for 2 decades. We know his backstory. We know his policy positions. We know who Brett Kavanaugh is. There are a lot of criticisms of Brett Kavanaugh that I have made. There's been criticisms of him that other people have made that I agree with. There's some things that I think ought to give conservatives pause, and they ought to really consider whether or not the conservative thing to do is to vote for Brett Kavanaugh. Mike Lee voiced some concern. Rand Paul voiced some concern. It sounds like they're eventually going to decide that they are going to vote in favor of Kavanaugh based on some of the statements they've recently made. But the point is, I totally understand having some reservations about Brett Kavanaugh coming from a conservative constitutionalist perspective. But one thing that I have never understood is this blatantly stupid argument that we just don't have enough information. We've got tons of information on Brett Kavanaugh. In fact, the reason that they're saying we don't have all the records is because there are so many records to obtain, it's going to take the Library of Congress about a month to deliver all of their work to him. And it's not like it's secret stuff that you can only get with the Library of Congress. The records of his judicial activities are very long and very detailed. So, again, there's some criticisms of Brett Kavanaugh I think make sense. The idea that we don't have enough information on him, I'm sorry, that does not hold any water with me whatsoever. We have far more information on him than we did any of Obama's appointees, for sure. I mean, look at Elena Kagan, for example. Elena Kagan had no judicial record because she had never been a judge before. And yet, she became one of the, I mean, that's like going straight from, I've never picked up a baseball bat in my life. I've been a baseball fan all my life, but never actually played baseball in my life, and now I'm going to be the starting pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. And that was what happened with Elena Kagan. And yet, liberals were all too eager to get her confirmed and get her straight through without worrying about not having enough information on her judicial record. But yet, when it comes to Brett Kavanaugh, them saying that there's just not enough information out there is laughable at best. And one thing that also is funny is Dianne Feinstein is saying that that she and a lot of the other senators are convinced that this is going to wind up ending Roe v. Wade. Good. Hope it does. I have my doubts about whether or not Kavanaugh will be a strict pro-lifer when it comes to the court. I hope that he is. I don't think I've ever prayed for Senator Feinstein to actually be proven correct, but this is where I'll make a notable exception. I hope that she's right on this about Kavanaugh being against Roe v. Wade. But nonetheless, if liberals are so concerned about this, do exactly the same thing I just recommended with Kamala Harris. If you're afraid that the Supreme Court is going to overturn Roe v. Wade, you know what the way around that is? A constitutional amendment guaranteeing a right to abortion. Now, I'm against it, obviously. But if that's what you want, if that is your goal, then it seems pretty obvious to me that as a member of the Senate, your next step should be a constitutional amendment guaranteeing a right to abortion, because it's not going to be unconstitutional if that's a constitutional amendment. See, this is what's so funny about the left. They tried to use, and succeeded in using, the Supreme Court as a political bludgeon to get their way through when they couldn't get it through the correct way, through the legislative process. And now they're afraid that that advantage is going to be taken away from them. Well, yeah, I understand that concern, but if it's a problem, if it's something that you're worried about, all you have to do is pass a right to abortion right there in the Constitution. But they're never going to do that because the only way the Democrats have ever been able to win at anything is to cheat. And they know it, and that's why they're afraid of a constitutionalist and an originalist being on the Supreme Court. And based on what I'm hearing, it looks like Kavanaugh is going to wind up sailing through. 860-1440, we'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Hebrews 8:10.
For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, says the Lord, I will put my laws into their minds, and I will write them on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 is the way to get in touch with me, or as always, you can follow me on Twitter, at Tactics Radio. Now, this is normally where I would say it's Thursday, but it's not Thursday. But nonetheless, it is time for Upon Further Review.
After review, we're rooting on the field.
If you can talk sports, you can talk with any guy in the world.
When sports and politics meet, it deserves a second look.
After further review, the player disqualification is reversed.
Here with the ruling, it's Caleb Colquitt and Sports Radio 740's Joe Hunk with Upon Further Review.
How does it feel to be here and here on a Tuesday?
It's weird.
It is also a little strange.
I would say it was weird because we had a meeting this morning, and then I'm leaving the meeting and going straight here, but I actually slept through the meeting. So I'm actually just now kind of waking up, so this is going to be really, really fun today.
I notice I sleep through a lot of my meetings, actually.
Yes. No, normally I would just sit over there during our meeting, and I'm just on Twitter and updating things. This time I literally slept through it. Like, I woke up, looked at my clock, and I went, why does my clock say it's 9:05? It's like, I set my alarm for 8:35, and then I went to my alarm, and I set it for 8:35 p.m., and not 8:35
a.m. p.m., gotcha.
Yeah, it did.
It's happened to me before.
So that is what I am. I'm currently, you know, catching up on everything, like even my tweet that I normally send out saying I'm about to be on the show with you. I am currently doing that as we speak.
Everything's behind.
It is. Everything is behind. That is literally what it is. Like, I'm talking to you right now as I'm saying download the app.
All right. Well, so one of the things we did want to bring up, and this is because I'm maybe having surgery later this week. That's why we're doing Upon Further Review earlier. But it actually.
So does this mean we get to do it again if you don't?
I guess. I didn't really think that far ahead. I'm betting on I'll be gone by Thursday. Surely they'll have me. They'll be able to.
Gone as in not here. Gone is not as in gone. Gone.
No.
Gone as in not here.
There's not a death surgery that I'm aware of.
No.
So,
no.
It's very
this is literally
procedure.
A simple remover.
Right.
Removal.
They're just taking out all my hardware. But anyway, so it actually wound up being really good though that we got to talk about it today because of course the big news broke the other night that Nike has released a new ad campaign featuring Colin Kaepernick.
Yes.
And the thing actually reads, let me see if I can pull it up here real quick.
It's actually a fantastic motto.
So here's where he says, it's just a picture of Colin Kaepernick's face, like an extreme close-up, and it says, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. And so Colin Kaepernick, I guess, is the newest person who's endorsing Nike. He's the new spokesman for Nike. And here's the thing that I have an issue with this, though. I actually agree with you. The raw content of what it's saying,
yeah,
fantastic.
I mean, it's really a great, great slogan.
Putting it with Colin Kaepernick is stupid. And the reason that I say that is because they're calling this a sacrifice. Like, the reason that anyone remembers who Colin Kaepernick is because of the protest.
Which again, see now, and this is where I actually think it's brilliant because the slogan fits the person. Because literally, if he hadn't have ever done that, let's be honest, if he had never done that, he'd still been a backup quarterback in the NFL.
Mm.
He would still be making. He would have a salary that's above $1 million, so he's making millions of dollars.
Would he still be a backup quarterback though? Because he got dropped.
Yeah,
and would. I don't think he would.
He has a skill set that is very unique. And I think that a lot of people who is a mobile quarterback, if you become a mobile quarterback and you have the ability to also pass the football, you can stay in that league for a while. Russell Wilson is a very smart quarterback. He's a mobile quarterback that is a very good passer. You can look around. Drew Brees is the exact same way. You know, and these guys are very smart with what they do. The thing with Colin Kaepernick is that he still needed to develop his passing, and that's the reason why he would be a backup quarterback. But he would be a backup quarterback.
But here's the reason I don't think that that's necessarily true. Two teams offered him a quarterback position after the protest.
Oh yeah, and he said no. One of those being the Denver Broncos.
Right.
Who and the literally other, the, are dying for quarterbacks right
now. Yeah,
and
now. The other was the Seahawks, right?
Yeah. And that's – the Seahawks offered him one, the Broncos, and let's not forget.
So that's what I'm saying. He's playing the victim.
Yeah.
Like, his sacrifice isn't a real sacrifice. He could have that if he wanted it. He's turning it down so he can continue this victim narrative.
And I don't think the NFL ever wanted it to get out that the Broncos offered him a deal.
Oh, I'm certain they did.
Because the moment they made the statement, or I think it was John Elway that made the statement, the NFL was like, don't mention again. Don't talk about it. Just do not talk about it one bit.
It became Fight Club.
Yeah, it was. You do not talk about how you offered him this contract. You just don't. And it is a sense where the NFL is trying to get away from this. They would love to get away from all the
NFL
protests.
NFL would love nothing more than for this problem to just vanish tomorrow.
It's hurting their business. It's nothing about shutting people up or going against their rights. It's hurting their business. And so they want to move on from it. You know, that's the reason why you hear CBS and ESPN have said, look, they're not going to show the anthem protests. So basically, everybody is trying to move on because they understand this hurts ratings. This hurts attendance. This hurts product placement. This hurts selling of all their merchandise. This hurts everything with the NFL.
Well, that's the thing. The NFL itself is by its very nature, a patriotic brand. I mean, look at their logo. It has the top of it is blue with white stars, and it's red, white, and blue. It's obvious that patriotism is something that is ingrained in their brand, and so for them to now be seen as uber unpatriotic is a real problem for them in the business world.
Well, and that's why they're trying to move away from it. And
right.
And what sucks about this for the NFL, their uniforms are made by Nike.
Are they really?
Yes.
That is hilarious.
Yes.
All of them? Like, it's not...
Yeah, no, it's their team uniforms. Their uniforms that they wear are made by Nike.
So it's not like college where some have Nike, nope. Some have different brands.
Everybody wears Nike.
Oh.
Everybody wears Nike.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, everybody wears Nike. And so they're all wearing it. And see, this is where... I'm never going to be this person that's going to say, I'm not buying any Nike gear. I'm not spending my money on Nike so that they make any money off of me. I don't buy directly from Nike anyway. I buy from the little sweatshop in China where I can get shoes for $20. That's what I do.
That's exactly what you're doing when you're buying Nike. The difference is you're paying $70 for it.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Last year, I bought I needed some workout shoes, and I bought the LeBron Soldier 11s. I bought them directly from China. I only spent $25. Like, I didn't spend the other $175 just to buy the new LeBrons. I know it's Under Armour. I just did the same thing with Under Armour. I just bought the Curry 5s. I literally bought them from China. I spent $31 on these things. My money's not going to Nike anyway.
Well,
if I buy a dry fit, I buy it from eBay. That Nike never gets my money to begin with, so I have no fight in this at all.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people actually are calling for a boycott of Nike, and we're going to address that in just a second when we come back.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com.
Still pretty pumped.
You should be. It was a very good win for Auburn. It was an amazing win for Auburn, to be honest, especially
really
with all the flaws. I mean, there's a lot of things that Auburn needs to work on, but to still beat one of the top 10 teams in the country and arguably a top 5 football team, no, that's a darn good win that Auburn fans should be happy about.
Auburn has a really funny habit of all of our wins have to be ugly.
Yeah,
have you noticed that?
That win was very, very ugly.
It was a sloppy win. It was a win, so I don't care. But, I mean,
I didn't even get to enjoy it. Like the whole time.
Really?
I kept sitting there going, all right, they're going to blow this. All right, they're going to blow this.
Oh, I was convinced they were going to blow it.
They're going to blow this. And then when they won, I went, wow, this is an amazing win. Like, Malzahn won a big game away from Jordan-Hare. They won at Mercedes-Benz. The defense looked amazing. They beat a college football playoff contender. Like, this is a really, really good win. So now I actually have to go back and watch the game and enjoy it. Because I didn't enjoy it the first time because I thought they was going to blow it the whole time.
Oh, I enjoyed it despite the fact that I was afraid they were going to lose. But
Well, I knew it was going to – when I was on my way home and I was, you know, coming home from Birmingham, and I was watching the game, and I thought, wow, this offense looks really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that first drive, I went, this offense may be really good.
Oh, when I saw that first drive, I was like, whoa, this is going to be a fun season.
If this is it, and Auburn could be a passing team this year, this is a really good football team. Mm-hmm. And then it all just kind of slowed down. Just slowed down.
Yeah, I think the absence of carry-on was really felt. I mean,
absolutely.
It was just blatant because Martin, who had some really good plays, he had, 22 carries and 80 yards?
Yes.
That's not, especially for an Auburn team, that's just so weird.
I think what we're going to see this week against Alabama State is and personally, I just love the man because he allows me to say this on the air and I can't get in trouble. Booby Whitlow is going to get, he's probably going to start getting some more carries, and they're going to see what they have from him because Cam Martin, to me, again, he can be good outside the tackles, but I think that Auburn needs somebody that can go between the tackles and outside, which is the reason why Kerryon was such a good back, is you never knew what he was going to do. And if you have a running back that can only do one or the other, it's very predictable what they're going to do when they're in the game.
Well, that was the thing about Kerryon. He can run into a crowd of eight guys and still wind up managing to get to maybe 3 yards.
Yeah.
And Cam can't do that.
No. And so that's the reason why you saw that run at the end of the game from Booby, and he was able to just power his way into the end zone. I think that you're going to probably see more carries from him this weekend.
I am looking forward to that. Back to the whole Nike thing, though, because I did want to bring this up. A lot of people now are saying that they want to boycott Nike, that they're not going to give Nike any more business after this. My response to this is, because I'm not really a big boycott guy anyway, and on Nike I really can't boycott anyway because I bought maybe two pairs of shoes since I've been working here.
Yeah.
And none of them have been Nike. I don't think I've bought a Nike shoe since I was in seventh grade, so I'm not going to like sit here on the air and pretend
Jordans?
I'm boycotting them.
No back. Jordans or anything?
No.
Okay.
No, I wear cowboy boots all the time, Joe.
They Jordan brand, I mean, they're branching out to football. You never know.
No.
They may be into Western wear next, man. I mean, who knows?
Although, you may not know this, Ariat's actually were started by people who used to work at Nike.
I don't know what that means.
Ariat's are cowboy boots.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to explain. I forgot I had to explain that.
Yep, 100%, bud.
But anyway, very comfortable boots, by the way. One thing that I've said about this is if you want to boycott Nike because of the association with Kaepernick, that's fine. I understand that. I don't really tell people what to boycott. I just don't see that as being my job. But I do think it's a little weird that this is the hill that they've decided to die on, that Kaepernick is the bridge too far, and this is going to be what they stop supporting Nike for when Nike donates to Planned Parenthood. If anything, that should be the reason you're not buying Nike shoes.
Again,
not Kaepernick.
They have like little places in China, sweatshops that make these shoes.
Well, that
I
too.
I buy for them. That's why when everybody look.
But another thing too on the sorry before yeah. I before we get off on this on the inverse of that, think about this. The people who are supporting the Black Lives Matter, that kind of message from Kaepernick, they're willing to support a brand that's founder, Margaret Sanger. Nike donates to an organization whose founder, Margaret Sanger, said that her mission in life was to eliminate the black race off of the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they think that this is consistent with their messaging. So I'm just saying both sides, I think, need to be a little more reflective on their priorities and think about what their money's actually going to. You got to dig a little deeper than just, oh, I saw this on the internet, now I'm outraged.
This marketing campaign is, and I know that you're going to hate this, is absolutely brilliant. It is.
Oh, you mean from a business standpoint?
Oh, from a business standpoint.
I said exactly the same thing because look at who their target audience is.
Because, like, for me, for instance, you know, I know that here's what I do. Every single year, whenever the new basketball shoes come out,
mm-hmm.
I look across the entire NBA and I find which shoe I actually enjoy the most. I think that's a really good shoe. The reason I bought the LeBron Soldier 11s, they're Velcro. They're literally like Velcro shoe. There's no laces. You slide your foot in, you Velcro. It's like Back to the Future 2. I loved them. So
you also wear your clothes inside out when you wear them?
I do, as a matter of fact. I don't mean to sometimes, but I do. My pockets are flapping out, and I've got ears on my shorts. It's crazy. But
the Cubs did win that World Series.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we're looking at it, I do it that way. Whenever I was playing baseball, I literally would just go through, and I would find – I was going to buy Nike regardless. I was. When I play golf, I was going to buy Nike regardless. It's not for me. It's not. Like, I was going to buy it regardless. This is about branding to people to get them to be interested in your shoes. That's all it is.
And I know that this is stereotyping, but studies have shown that this is actually true. Look at the clientele that Nike winds up getting most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, black people spend more money on shoes than white people. It's a fact.
Trust me, I was watching, there's now commercials for stores online where you don't have to wait in line anymore to get your Nikes. Because so many people will go stand in line for the new KDs.
It's like a new phone.
Yes, I mean, it is. As a matter of fact, I mean, I have friends that I'm like, dude, the shoes are ugly. Yeah, I know, but they're the new KDs, man. It's what we're all wearing. I'm like, all right, I get it.
It's a status symbol.
It is 100% a status symbol. I'm like, dude, you're going to wear them? Nah, I ain't going to wear them. Then why do you own them? Because, you know, it's cool to just own them. Again, I told you, I bought the Curry 5s. That's Under Armour. I'm going to wear them. I'm wearing them tomorrow to the gym. Like, I buy them to wear them. But it's not for me. This is 100% marketing to the demographic that supports Colin Kaepernick, whoever it is, and it is getting them to be interested in his brand, his shoes, his line of clothing, whatever. Because here's what they saw. They saw that tons of people wanted to buy Black Lives Matter shirts. Mm-hmm. So they said, wait a second. All we got to do is just throw the Nike swoosh on there, and we've got ourselves a $1 million brand.
Well, and here's the thing. Nike did not become, I think they're the third most valuable name brand in American history by being stupid.
Yeah.
So they took a calculated risk. They said, okay, we might alienate some guys like me who have never bought a Nike shoe since they were in middle school, but we're going to get 10 times that business from the other people that actually buy new shoes every year.
Here's the reason why they know that you're not going to boycott Nike. There are people listening to News Radio 1440 right now, and there's people that listen to Sports Radio 740, and they're like, I'm boycotting Nike. Really? So you're telling me you haven't already purchased your Alabama under or your Alabama Nike polo?
Yep.
You're telling me you're not buying that? You're not buying your brand new Alabama Nikes that you buy every single year, or your brand new coach's hat? Bull crap.
Mm-hmm.
Bull crap. I'm sorry. What brand actually is the sports? Alabama wears Nike.
Yep.
Let's see people in the state of Alabama boycott Nike.
Everything Alabama does is Nike. I mean, you can buy Alabama stuff that's not Nike, but if you want to get the official stuff, it's all Nike.
It is all Nike. All of it. Every bit of it. And I guarantee you, they're not boycotting Nike.
Nope.
They're not boycotting Nike at all.
All right. 860-1440. Chaplain's Report is up next. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
No problem.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, says the Lord, I will put my laws into their minds, and I will write them on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.
Chaplain's report this morning comes from the book of Proverbs. There are six things which the Lord hates, and he addresses them in this particular passage, and it's funny, he actually says six things and then seven things. But Solomon is addressing some of the things that God hates, and in this book of wisdom, he goes through and lists certain things that a worthless person, somebody who God does not favor, would have, and then contrasts that with desirable traits. And so here he's in the passage where he's discussing some of the things that God hates, and you think about God being a God of love, being a God of compassion, that there would be nothing that he hates. But there are things that God hates. God hates sin. God hates when we are cruel to one another. And so even in a loving manner, because there are things that we do that hurt ourselves and hurt others, there are certain things that God does hate. And Solomon really addresses that in Proverbs 6:16 through 19, where King Solomon writes, "There are six things which the Lord hates. Yes, seven, which are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers." Now, you could do a whole sermon. Heck, you could do a series of sermons just on the seven things that the Lord hates. There's all kinds of ways that you could extrapolate that and look at it in detail and explain exactly why God hates that thing, why it is that each of these things are problematic. But real quickly, I want to give a summary of each of these things, and I want you to listen one more time to me reading the list and try to find a commonality in these things. Haughty eyes, lying tongue, the hands that shed innocent blood, and a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among the brothers. Well, I think that one of the commonalities that you could find in each of these is self-interest. Because you can look at any of these things, and they're all done from the primary motivation of how does it benefit me? How can I get ahead? If I have proud eyes, I do so because I think I'm better than everybody else. If I lie to other people, it's because I'm deceiving them because I want something. If I have hands that shed innocent blood, it's because I have something against them. Because if you're shedding innocent blood, you're obviously not doing so in self-defense or because you're in danger. If I'm devising wicked plans, it's because I need them to benefit me or to work to my advantage in some way. If I'm running rapidly to evil, well, the only reason anybody runs rapidly to evil, who sees two options and quickly runs to the one that is less favorable, is because it helps them out in some kind of way. A false witness who utters lies, well, you don't lie about something unless you're doing so to paint yourself in a better light or to get something out of the one you're lying to. And one who spreads strife amongst the brothers. This, unfortunately, and I think that there's a reason that this one is last. I'm not saying that God necessarily hates this one more than he hates the other ones, because that's not what the scripture says. But I think the reason that that one is last is because it kind of summarizes the other six. Because all of these things spread strife amongst your brothers. Just like any other father, if you ask a parent, and I've never been a parent, but I've talked to a lot of them about this. When you ask a parent what hurts them the most when it comes to their children, it's when their children are cruel to one another. If you have more than one kid, that's going to happen from time to time. Children are going to hurt one another. And that really does devastate a parent, because these are two people that the parent has cared for and raised and loves, and to see the two of them fighting really breaks their heart. And that's exactly what happens to God when we're unkind to one another. We're called to be brothers and sisters. We're called to treat each other with respect and to care about what happens to each other. That's part of the reason that the golden rule, as Jesus presents it in the Sermon on the Mount, is that we're supposed to treat others the way that we would want to be treated. We're supposed to treat others the way we want God to treat us. And when we don't do that, when we fall short of that goal, that's where problems start to drum up. Somebody that intentionally goes to other people and tries to stir up problems with them, that's something that the Lord hates. He doesn't hate the person, but he does hate the action. So to see your children fighting is one thing, but to see another one of your children going in and trying to start fights between people, that is something that the Lord cannot stand. And it's really easy to see why if we understand him from the perspective of being a father. Unfortunately, there are so many people in this world that specifically post things or start fights or try to present information specifically to get us to fight with one another. And unfortunately, I've even seen brothers and sisters in the church that are willing to do this, which is about the furthest thing from living a Christ-centered life as a person can possibly be. And it really does upset me when people seem to do things specifically to try to stir up discord amongst other people. There's a reason that Jesus said, "Blessed be the peacemakers." Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com.